This is a Battle of Britain podcast from the Royal Air Force Museum.
Nazi Germany's aim was to destroy morale through an unrelenting bombing campaign and thereby bring about the defeat of Great Britain. Thus, between the 7th of September 1940 and the 10th of May 1941, Luftwaffe bombers pounded British cities. This podcast will examine this period of history and the role of the RAF in what has become known as the Blitz. At 11:15 a.m. on the 3rd of September 1939, Neville Chamberlain spoke to the British people and declared war on Germany.
I am speaking to you from the Cabinet Room at 10 Downing Street. This morning, the British ambassador in Berlin handed the German government a final note stating that unless we heard from them by 11 o'clock, that they were prepared at once to withdraw their troops from Poland, a state of war would exist between us. I have to tell you now that no such undertaking has been received, and that consequently this country is at war with Germany.
Following his radio address, sirens sounded in London and people ran for cover from looming aircraft. It was a false alarm, but the incident confirmed a commonly held belief that air attacks would play a great part in the forthcoming conflict. On the same day, Hitler gave a speech in the Reichstag, proclaiming, "I will not make war against women and children. I have ordered my air force to restrict itself to attacks on military objectives." Britain had already fallen prey to aerial attacks, having endured Zeppelin and Gotha bomber raids in the First World War. The distinction between combatant and civilian was eradicated forever. In 1932, the British politician Stanley Baldwin remarked that the man in the street needed to understand that there is no power on earth that can prevent him from being bombed. Whatever people tell him, the bomber will always get through. In 1936, the Joint Planning Committee stated, "It is clear that in a war against us, the concentration of the whole German air offensive ruthlessly against Great Britain will be possible. It would be the most promising way of trying to knock this country out." This view was seemingly justified in April 1937 with the Luftwaffe raid on Guernica during the Spanish Civil War, in which the majority of the town was destroyed. During the interwar period, the government and the newly formed Royal Air Force set about making preparations for a possible future conflict in which the civilian population would be targeted. The air staff believed that defensively their sole advantage would be the speed of fighter planes in intercepting the bombers. Even then, the bombers would be flying at a speed of over 200 miles per hour. However, by 1936, only the Hawker Fury and the Gloster Gauntlet of the RAF's fighter planes could exceed this speed. In 1937, the government created an air raid warden service and recruited approximately 200,000 volunteers in 1 year. In 1938, a system was instituted regarding air raid warnings and blackout in preparation for an enemy aerial offensive. Neville Chamberlain asked Parliament to pass the Emergency Powers Defence Act. Passed on the 28th of August 1938, it empowered the government to take measures to secure the safety of the public in the event of war. Over the next few days, as part of other general measures being implemented, the air raid precautions volunteers were called up. In November 1938, Chamberlain placed Sir John Anderson in charge of air raid precautions. He commissioned the engineer William Patterson to design a cheap air raid shelter. Within a couple of months, over 1 million Anderson shelters were distributed to people in areas the government believed to be targeted by the Luftwaffe. The Luftwaffe bombing campaign against Britain can be broken down into phases. The prelude began following the fall of France and the onset of the Battle of Britain in July 1940. Goering wanted to demolish Fighter Command's ability to combat an invasion against Britain through attacks on airfields and the aircraft industry. On the 1st of August 1940, Hitler issued a directive detailing the conduct of the Luftwaffe in the air war. He stated, "The war against England is to be restricted to destructive attacks against industry and air force targets which have weak defensive forces. It is also stressed that every effort should be made to avoid unnecessary loss of life amongst the civilian population." However, on the night of the 23rd to 24th of August 1940, the course of the Battle of Britain changed. During a raid, German aircraft flew over London and released the remainder of their bomb loads on the city below. On the 25th of August, Churchill ordered Bomber Command to launch a similar attack against Berlin, sending out 81 bombers, resulting in the deaths of 10 German civilians. The British raids continued. Hitler was furious and in a speech on the 4th of September threatened to obliterate British cities if the raids against Germany continued. On the 7th of September 1940, over 300 German bombers gathered in formation to launch the Luftwaffe's first major attack of the war on the British capital. Thus, the first phase of the Blitz began. One of the British pilots who was scrambled to meet the incoming raid remembered, "As we broke through the haze, you could hardly believe it. As far as you could see, there was nothing but German aircraft coming in, wave after wave." The air raid siren sounded over London just before 5 p.m. that day, with the all-clear signal coming nearly 12 hours later. 430 people were killed and 1,600 seriously wounded. Over 1,000 fires were reported and more than 500 pumps were needed at Surrey Commercial Docks alone. The intensity of the raid shocked and incensed the British people. A new and young recruit in the RAF, Francis Robert Edwin McCarthy, had been posted to Blackpool, but as his letter home reveals, his thoughts were with his family back in London.
"Sunday the 8th of September 1940. Dear Mum, Dad and Auntie, when I heard the news my heart went right down to my boots and I shan't be able to rest until I get a letter from you. It must have been a terrible feeling for you all, and it is awful to think of all those casualties. I do hope you have all been spared. I couldn't put in writing all the names I've called them, and believe me, when the airmen get through training, they'll have hell to go through. In fact, we would grab the chance to go up after them today if we could get it. I'm very worried about everyone in Tottenham, and if you could give me any news, I'd be glad."
From the 7th of September onwards, German bombers attacked London day and night, every day bar one, until mid-November. Other cities were not to be spared. Birmingham and Bristol were attacked in mid-October. From mid-November until February 1941, the Luftwaffe broadened its raids to include other industrial and port cities, launching the second phase of the Blitz against Britain. On the night of the 14th and 15th of November 1940, the Luftwaffe launched a 12-hour raid on Coventry, destroying three-quarters of the city. The Germans hoped that British morale would collapse through sustained aerial bombardment, but the raid on Coventry proved the mettle of the British population. Though mass graves had to be dug to bury over 560 casualties, within weeks the city and its factories were back up and running, with morale stronger than ever. This is not to diminish the toll the raids took, or the work of the emergency and civilian services in dealing with the devastation caused by the raids, which cannot be underestimated. On the 22nd of December 1940, a raid on Manchester took place. Betty Morrell had signed up as a WAF and was ordered to report for duty in Manchester that day. She remembered,
"The 22nd of December was a bad night for Manchester. We could hear the distant noise of the air raid in Southport. My train left at 8 a.m. and should have arrived in Manchester about an hour later, but the raid had damaged most of the lines and disrupted all the timetables."
She arrived the following morning and encountered an ARP warden who offered to direct her to her post on Peter Street.
"He was far more hungry and tired than I was, having been on duty during the raid and helping with the rescue all the morning. We scrunched our way over broken glass and blackened timbers. Rescue workers and firemen were clearing the rubble and trying to deal with all the mess. I was familiar with the results of hit-and-run raids, bad enough in themselves, but this was dreadful. Fire and destruction everywhere. It was a relief to find Peter Street still standing."
The switching of Luftwaffe policy from raiding the airfields to the cities enabled Fighter Command to rejuvenate itself in the Battle of Britain. However, the scale of German raids and the devastation they caused made the Blitz seem one-sided. At the start of the Blitz, the anti-aircraft guns did not possess radar capabilities, and it took an average of 32,000 rounds to bring down a Luftwaffe bomber. The aircraft of Fighter Command fared even worse results. On a couple of occasions, German bombers were brought down by Spitfires, Hurricanes, Blenheims and Defiants. This was because either the bombers were flying low enough to be caught by the searchlights, or because they were flying on a bright moonlit night. Air Chief Marshal Dowding, who had triumphantly led Fighter Command through the Battle of Britain, was instituting a slow but steady plan to try and combat the Luftwaffe bombers. On the 9th of September 1940, he began the Kenly experiment. Gun-laying radar sets were mounted at searchlight posts in the Kenly sector. These were then linked to the Kenly sector station, which then guided the fighter aircraft to the incoming raiders with air interception radar. Dowding's idea was that a night fighter would rely on the instrumentation to locate the bombers, be able to shoot them down and return to the ground. Though seemingly far-fetched, it was accomplished on a few occasions. Improvements were continually made to ground-based radar, and more searchlights and anti-aircraft guns became radar-controlled, meaning that enemy aircraft could be pinpointed with greater accuracy. An effective defence to the bombing raids came in the form of an aircraft, the Bristol Bow Fighter. The first Bow Fighters came off the production lines in late August 1940. They were equipped with four 20mm Hispano cannons mounted in the lower fuselage, and the nose could also accommodate some of the first airborne intercept radar antennas. Not only was the aircraft fast enough to meet the German bombers, reaching a maximum speed of 335 miles an hour, but it also had the ability to gear down to 240 miles per hour. This enabled the pilots to overtake without overshooting the enemy bombers. The effectiveness of this aircraft is reflected in the number of enemy aircraft they were able to shoot down. In the first 2 months of the Blitz, the other fighter aircraft of the RAF were only able to shoot down 8 bombers out of 12,000 sorties. By March 1941, with bow fighters becoming regular features of aerial defence, night fighters were able to shoot down 22 Luftwaffe bombers. In April, the figure rose to 48, and in the first 2 weeks of May, to 96 enemy aircraft destroyed. Hitler had been hoping to crush Britain before June, when he planned to implement Operation Barbarossa, the Nazi invasion of Soviet Russia. However, with the increase in German losses, he decided to abandon the campaign against Britain and concentrate his resources on the invasion of the Soviet Union. By the end of May, the Blitz had come to an end. Between the 7th of September 1940 until the end of May 1941, the Luftwaffe had dropped 46,000 tons of bombs and over 10,000 incendiaries on targeted areas of Great Britain. Over 40,000 British civilians were killed. The Germans' aim to disrupt British production and break the morale of the British people never occurred. In most cases, although some of the raids reduced some industrial production, it was never completely halted and vital supply lines remained open. Instead of breaking morale, the Blitz helped to bind the British people together and made them more determined to fight against Nazism. As the Prime Minister, Winston Churchill, said in a speech on the 12th of April 1941, "I see the damage done by the enemy attacks, but I also see, side by side with the devastation, and amid the ruins, quiet, confident, bright and smiling eyes, beaming with a consciousness of being associated with a cause far higher and wider than any human or personal issue. I see the spirit of an unconquerable people."
That was a podcast from the Royal Air Force Museum's Battle of Britain series. If you would like to learn more about the history of the Battle of Britain, why not visit the museum's Battle of Britain Hall in London, which houses the world's most comprehensive collection of aircraft that fought in the battle. The hall is open daily from 12 noon to 6 p.m.